listening with Town Square Media Tuscaloosa, call 205-345-7200 or click on Advertise With Us on our website.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, good morning, everybody. Here we go. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show. We're glad to be here with you on a Monday, September the 22nd, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. I got my main man, Chase Brumfield, back in the control room, manning the controls and taking your phone calls on the Storage Center hotline at 205-342-9904. And we're ready to go. Got a good show on tap for you today. Right off the bat, some breaking news on Alabama's SEC. Permanent SEC opponents beginning next season with the 9-game schedule, according to Chris Lowe from On Three. Those annual opponents for Alabama are going to be, and I don't think anybody is concerned or you know, had any doubt that it was going to be Auburn and Tennessee. I think the question was who would be that third team. Would it be LSU, who many felt would be Alabama's third permanent opponent, or would it be Mississippi State, because of the tradition and history of that series, Alabama's longest running opponent, just a little more than 60 miles between the two campuses. And it is Mississippi State, which I like a lot. I think that for Alabama to play Auburn and now Tennessee is, you know, you knew those two were going to be permanent opponents. I mean, there was not going to be any doubt about that. That third one, though, even though LSU and Alabama have a lot of history, so do Alabama and Mississippi State. And I think you're trying to make this as fair and equitable as you can. And if you're going to be playing Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU every year, I think that was going to be a lot to ask. So, again, this isn't official from the SEC, but it is from Chris Lowe, SEC reporter for On3, formerly of ESPN, and the Knoxville News Sentinel. So I think you can rest assured that this is correct. So anyway, that's right off the top. We'll tell you more about the show here in just a moment. First, though, I need to tell you this hour of the Gary Harris Show is being brought to you, as always, by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it is just a better way of banking. Think about that for a moment. You're not just a customer. You are a member, and you have a say-so in what happens in your credit union. They have annual member meetings that you can attend in person or virtually. And because they're member-owned and not-for-profit, they're not trying to pay off their shareholders. They're taking their profits and returning them to you, the member, in the form of lower interest rates on loans and higher dividends. Find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Alabama Credit Union. Loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership and join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, the lineup today, it's the Monday lineup. Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, Tider Insider TV at 9:30 this morning. Then Casey Smith on golf at 10:30. Of course, the Ryder Cup starts this week, later this week, up at Bethpage Black in New York. And it's probably the most hyped-up Ryder Cup possibly that we've ever had. I think you could argue that it is, and it's going to be something else. Of course, a huge football weekend coming up as well with Alabama and Georgia coming off the bye. And now those two teams will meet over in Athens on Saturday night and some other big games as well. So it's going to be a big week. We're glad to be with you here on the Gary Harris Show. And we'll take your phone calls, as I said, as well, 205-342-9904. We'll get to some calls here in just a moment. Also, Kalen DeBoer and his coordinators, Ryan Grubb and Kane Womack, have their press conferences today beginning at 11:30 this morning with the coordinators, Coach DeBoer at noon. So we're back into a regular routine. Alabama is going to play 5 straight weeks of SEC opponents before taking another bye prior to the LSU game. So these 5 straight games in the SEC for 5 straight weeks, is going to really determine the season. Not that the final four games aren't important. Obviously, they are. But where you're at after this five-game stretch, after eight games into the season, I think you're pretty much going to know, you know, where this season is headed. If you do well in these five games in the conference, then you set yourself up for those final four games to be really special and have a chance to get into the playoff and maybe get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game. You drop a couple games in this five-game stretch, and it's going to be really difficult to get to where you want to go. So big stretch of games coming up for the Crimson Tide, and Alabama is going to be ready to go. All right, we're ready to go. We're off and running here on the Gary Harris Show. We're going to take a timeout. When we come back, we're going to get to Corey and Trustful, and we're going to be off and running here on the Gary Harris Show. This hour brought to you by Alabama Credit Union, and we'll be back and take some phone calls and start getting ready for a really big week of college football and of golf here on the Gary Harris Show. We'll be back right after this on Tide 100.9 FM at 1230 AM, WTBC, your home for Alabama sports.
What's trending on the Tuscaloosa Thread.
Good Monday morning. Hale is one of 10 counties in the state to receive grant money for its 911 center. The Hale County Communications District will receive $136,000 to upgrade call handling systems. Award letters will be sent out by the Alabama 911 Board in coming weeks. Click TuscaloosaThread.com for more West Alabama news, sports, and weather throughout the day. It's absolutely free. Don Hartley, Town Square Media, Tuscaloosa.
As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three Special.
For you, contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127. North River Timber, CO at gmail.com. North River Timber Company.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today, a passing shower or thunderstorm in a few spots this afternoon and this evening. The high today 90, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow morning sunshine, a few scattered showers and storms by afternoon, the high 91. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 77 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Talked about passing thunderstorms. I sure wish we could catch one in this area, man. I don't know about you guys, but I would love to catch a passing thunderstorm. I think it would be great for these allergies that I've been battling, and just for the environment, the climate, to wipe out some of this dry air. So maybe we'll catch one. It is a little bit cooler outside this morning, a little bit more pleasant, which is good news. So, but enough about the weather. We're here to talk sports this morning, and we'll get into the Oklahoma and Auburn game, which there's a lot of controversy about the officiating in that game. I've been saying for years that, you know, it's hard. It's a hard job, and officiating is flawed, and there have been a number of games where there have been blown calls that have impacted the outcome of the game. Now, all of a sudden, after the Auburn game, everybody's in an uproar about it, which I admit, I thought there were a couple calls that went against Auburn in that game, including the one that was a touchdown for Oklahoma where they were going to run a guy off and he didn't go off the field and he was wide open. It was a blown call. There's no doubt about it. But blown calls have been happening to teams in this league, and now all of a sudden there's an outrage about it. Where was the outrage in Knoxville back in 2022 or for Alabama in the 2019 Iron Bowl when Auburn got an extra play at the end of the half that wound up being the winning field goal in the game? It's been going on for a while, but there's no doubt that it's going to continue to go on. All these guys can do is the best that they can, and you got to live with the results. But now after this game between Auburn and Oklahoma, everybody's ready to do something about the officiating. and the SEC felt the need to put out a statement on it Saturday night, saying that the call was missed on Oklahoma's touchdown. All right, let's jump out on the Storage Center hotline and welcome in our pal Corey from over in Trustful. He's going to lead us off. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning, Gary. How are you this morning?
Doing well, buddy.
That was a crazy game with over in Oklahoma. Oklahoma's defense is for real, and they flex their muscle and show that they're a real contender in the SEC.
Yeah, their defense is good. Offensively, I thought Oklahoma would do a little bit better in the game. Auburn's defense is good up front, too. So, you had two good defenses. It was a defensive game. But in the end, Auburn's inability to block Oklahoma up front is what cost them in that game. And they had chances to win it. But down the stretch, you know, they got Oklahoma was able to get pressure on Jackson Arnold. I think they wound up sacking him how many times, Corey? 10 or 11 times in the game? Something like that?
10 times.
And, you know, Auburn's running game, neither team really ran the ball. It was a defensive football game. And Oklahoma at home, you know, made enough plays to win the game, particularly there at the end. And, you know, for them, it's a big win. We talked about it last week. For the loser of this game, you know, you start out 0-1, and, you know, you're behind the eight ball. That's just the reality of it.
Isn't it inevitable that Sam Pittman and Billy Napier are going to be fired eventually?
I think it's going to be tough for Napier to keep his job. I think it's going to be tough for Sam Pittman to keep his job. I think they have both had opportunities that a lot of coaches aren't given. Those schools have been patient with them. I think some of it's the modern landscape of college football. I think it's going to be, you're going to see less coaches get the plug pulled on them early in their tenure, simply because of how much money it costs to fire a coach and then how much money it costs to hire a coach on top of the one that you fire. So I think you've seen schools be a little more patient. But with what Florida's got ahead of them schedule-wise, it's going to be very difficult for them to turn this thing around. And I can't imagine that they're going to have a winning record and that he's going to be back. And the same thing with Pittman in Arkansas. I mean, they have absolutely lost back-to-back games that no could have won. They should have won. They should have beaten Ole Miss. They had them beat. Late fumble. Same thing with the Memphis game. And so Pittman has been terrible in one-score games, and that's continued. So I think you're going to see at some point, whether it's at the end of the season or in season, I think you're going to see changes at Florida and Arkansas.
How impressed were you with Philadelphia able to come back yesterday?
Yeah, it's just huge. It's huge because that was a game where their first half offensively was terrible. Philadelphia, outside of the early touchdown after the interception, didn't do anything in the first half. And I thought more of it was the play calling than, you know, I didn't think Jalen Hurts was playing bad. They just really weren't trying to move the ball down the field. They fall down by 19 points early in the third quarter, and then they just flipped the switch, you know. They started throwing the ball to Devontae Smith. They started throwing the ball to A.J. Brown. That opened up the running game a little bit for Saquon Barkley. I mean, the Rams weren't going to let Saquon Barkley beat them. After the way he ran through them last year, they were not going to let him beat them. So much like the Cleveland Browns had the same type of game plan for Derrick Henry, they're like, you know what, we're not going to let the running back beat us. So they weren't going to let Barkley beat them, so they put it on Jalen Hurts. And as he often does, more times than not, he answered the bell. I mean, he absolutely brought that team back and stormed from behind, made critical throws on fourth down, and hit what turned out to be the game-winning touchdown to Devontae Smith. And then, of course, the Philadelphia defense blocking a second field goal. And not only did they block the field goal, but we know Jordan Davis blocked it and picked it up and took it 61 yards for a touchdown. So that was noteworthy because the Rams were down by one. So if the Rams miss the field goal, they still cover. Now, I'm talking about from a point spread perspective. And people who bet on the Rams who had, you know, when they were up, Rams were up 19, getting 3.5, they probably were counting their money. But if that field goal's blocked, the Rams still cover, losing by one. So, of course, if they make the field goal, they win the game outright. So there was no way for them not to cover unless they gave up a touchdown. And that's exactly what happened on the last play of the game. So from a betting perspective, that's what the, you know, we call a bad beat. And if you had bet on the Rams, you're just absolutely sick this morning. But it tells you what the Eagles are all about, their championship DNA. As I said before, Corey, the only thing that Jalen Hurts is concerned about is winning the game. And he doesn't care how he does it. They did that. And also, Mac Jones brought the 49ers back on a final drive to win. So he's 2-0 as a starter this year. The expectation is that Brock Purdy will be back. But, boy, did Mac play well in these two games. And he did something that the 49ers haven't done a lot of. They haven't won a lot of last possession games. And he was able to do that for them with Kyle Shanahan. So, good day for those two quarterbacks. Bryce Young, too. The Panthers get a win, and he had a good game, and they beat the Falcons 30-0. So, good day for former Alabama quarterbacks on Sunday.
You know what? Switching gears here a second, I thought Hillcrest would have played better offensively. Their defense is really good. But I was shocked that he was able to shut them out as poorly as offensively Hillcrest was.
I thought the same thing, Corey. I did too. I'm with you all the way. I thought Hillcrest played well on defense. They didn't get any help from their offense. You know, give the Hewitt Trussell defense credit. But I'm with you. I thought Hillcrest offensively would be able to generate a little more. And they didn't. And it was an impressive shutout win for Hewitt Trussell. And Hewitt Trussell now is setting themselves up to have a chance to win this region. And, you know, can they beat Thompson? You know, we'll find out. I don't know for sure, but I know this. They're 5-0. They got a ninth grader at quarterback. And Josh Floyd's son is going to be really, really good. He already is. They're tough. You said it last week. They're a solid team all the way around. And that was impressive to go into Hillcrest on Friday night and shut them out. What was it, 27-0, Corey?
24-0.
24-0, yeah. And to shut them out 24-0 was really an impressive win.
Yeah, I was just sick to my stomach that that guard got injured, and he's one of our offensive lineman leaders, and he was in a hair cast, and just made me sick. But injuries happen, and you got to move on. But very proud of the team win, and now we have Thompson, and then the big matchup with Thompson, and we know Thompson rules 7A, and until somebody knocks him off, most people are going to pick Thompson to win, but I think this is a really good team, and we get him at home, and so we'll have to see. But I'm looking forward to this Georgia game. Most people are going to pick Georgia to win, not just because the game is at Georgia, but because of Kalen DeBoer's road record. But just like we know this. Alabama has been Kirby Smart's kryptonite. Will that continue? I don't know. But this team has flipped the switch. And I know it's against weak competition, but you play who you play. And if we can get the tight end that we've got in these last two games, Alabama has an excellent chance to go into Athens and get a win.
Yeah, there's no doubt they're good enough to win. We'll just will they win? I don't know. I mean, I do think it, you know, Georgia having the home field is going to be big in the game, but it's going to be a big time game. There's no doubt about that. So we'll see what happens. Hey, thank you, Corey.
You got to be
all right, 9:28. We'll take a timeout, and before we do, I'll remind you the YMCA of Tuscaloosa is ready for you. The Y is ready for you, and you're ready for the Y. I was in there yesterday afternoon, and I absolutely love the place, and look forward to going every time that I have an opportunity, and you will too. It's more than just a gym; it's a community. And I think you'll enjoy becoming a member. Find out more at YMCATuscaloosa.org. That's YMCATuscaloosa.org. We're going to come back with Rodney Orr from KiderInsider.com next here on The Gary Harris Show.
job done. You just have to get in the seat. Learn more at your John Deere dealer or visit johndeere.com/GatorXUV.
Where the season never ends. This is your home of Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show, and it's time to visit with Rodney Orr from TiderInsider.com, TiderInsider TV, also Inside the Trenches podcast, which we will bring you tonight at 7 o'clock, by the way, here on Tide 100.9 FM with Wallace Gilberry, Andre Smith, Rodney, and me. So we look forward to that. But right now, we've got Rodney one-on-one here on the Gary Harris Show, and good morning, Rod. How are you?
Good morning. How's it going, Gary?
Going well. Well, it's here. I said last week was the calm before the storm. Now it's time for the storm to brew. And by Saturday night in Athens, Georgia, this is going to be a special football game, I think, with Alabama at Georgia. Full speed ahead now beginning today with press conferences and practices. And Bama will fly to Athens on Friday afternoon, play the game on Saturday night. What's your feeling here as we are 5 days out?
Well, I think... You know, obviously, what we said after the Florida State game, it was an opportunity to take a really baby step against ULM, and then Wisconsin take another step, which they've done, and now here's the big step. So, you know, I think if Alabama could come out with a win here, obviously it would completely change the narrative from a month ago, position Alabama really well for the future. The question is, to me, continues to be, you know, how does Alabama respond on the road to adversity? And, you know, you're talking about a road game where you're going into a stadium in Athens where Georgia's won 33 straight games. I think when you look at the Georgia program, they're as mentally tough as any program in the country. I think we saw that against Tennessee when they had to make all those plays down the stretch to win the game. So it's going to be a real challenge for Alabama. But you know what, Gary? I mean, my initial gut feeling is, and I'm not making a prediction on the game right now, but I am saying I think Alabama does go in and play really well in this game.
Yeah, you'll make your prediction tomorrow night on Tider and Tider TV at 6:30 on WVUA 23, and so will I. Yeah, I'm with you. I think Alabama's going to play well. I think the lesson learned, whatever that was at Florida State, I think they've learned from it. I think they've applied those lessons, and they're a much better football team right now than they were just three games ago. But Georgia is also a highly motivated football team for more than just wanting to win this game for their season. I don't think there's any doubt. If you're Kirby Smart and Nick Saban was your mentor, you spent 9 years at Alabama, and you were part of what was he a part of, Roddy? Four national championships, actually, at Alabama. So, you know, to have that hanging over you that you have not been able to have success against the Crimson Tide other than the one national championship, which Georgia did win in Indianapolis, I think that's something that he's aware of. And even though this team for Georgia and this team for Alabama are not last year's teams or any of those other teams, I think Georgia is going to be highly motivated at home to kind of, for Kirby, for their coach, to kind of put that talk to rest. So you're going to have to not only overcome the Georgia football team, Rodney, but I think you're going to have to overcome a little bit of the history of this series and this rivalry.
Yeah. And I think on the flip side, they're going to have to overcome it. You know, again, Alabama's probably potentially cost Georgia three national championships. 2017 for sure was one of them. Potentially the next year, 18, when Alabama comes back, wins the SEC championship game, Georgia could have been a team that would certainly have challenged. And then I think, you know, obviously in 2022, when they have the long streak going, 2023, they have the long streak going, and, you know, Alabama ends it in the SEC championship game. I think if Georgia gets in the playoffs that year, they probably win the thing. So, yeah, Alabama's been a nemesis, and it's kind of been a little bit in their heads, I think. But now, again, I think Georgia's a really tough, mentally tough program. They're really mentally tough. We saw that against Tennessee. And I think, you know, again, you go into this game, there's certain keys. And I think one thing is, how does Alabama deal with the physical toughness of Tennessee, of Georgia? Georgia's going to run the football. They're going to pound it. Kirby has gone back to a little bit of the style of, hey, we want to be tough physically running the football. And they did that against Tennessee. They rushed for nearly 200 yards in that game. And I think that was really a key. And I think Alabama's going to be really challenged defensively to slow that down. And I think, too, going on the road, Ty Simpson's been really a hot quarterback. I think you've got to protect him and give him some opportunities to make some throws. And he's going to have to kind of play like he did at Bryant-Denny Stadium. He's going to have to be accurate. He's going to have to be decisive. And Kirby's going to mix things up. And with that said, this is about establishing some running game too. I think he's going to need some help with that running game. Jam Miller should be back. We expect him back. And I think Alabama's going to have to run the ball to kind of keep Georgia honest. If they can do those things, then I think Alabama's got a chance to really be extremely competitive in this game.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Ty Simpson because that's where I was going to go. Both these quarterbacks, Gunnar Stockton and Ty Simpson, had a lot to prove going into the season. And so far, both have passed the test. Alabama has the one loss, but you and I talked about it after the game. I thought Ty played well enough in the Florida State game, had the people around him played better. And then the last two games, he's been spectacular. And Gunnar Stockton obviously passed a huge test at Tennessee, bringing the Georgia team back to win that game with some incredible throws down the stretch. So both these quarterbacks, as you would expect, with their their reputations out of high school and the fact that Georgia and Alabama signed them, tells you they've got talent. But, you know, you look back to just the start of the season and questions at quarterback, and now I would say that both these schools, these quarterbacks have answered the questions so far. But it could come down Saturday night to who plays the best at that position. In a game like this, quarterback plays crucial, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Gunnar Stockton really impressed me at Tennessee. The guy came off the bench last year without much experience in the SEC championship game and helped Georgia win that game. So he did a really nice job at Tennessee. I thought he stepped up as a passer. He made some clutch throws. Again, 4th and 6, he delivered the throw for a touchdown. They got the 2-point conversion, sent it into overtime, found a way to win. So he showed a lot of moxie to me on the road. He showed some improvement, better than what I really expected as a passer. I think the key with trying to slow him down a little bit is you're going to have to get pressure on him. Alabama got 4 sacks in this last game. So can they generate some pressure? And when they do, can they get him on the ground? Can they keep him from breaking through pass lanes that I think Alabama's been a little undisciplined in that regard? And it's allowed quarterbacks to pick up huge chunks of yardage. So I think you're going to have to really be disciplined in those pass rush lanes because you have 3rd and 5. Gunnar Stockton's very capable of extending drives with his legs. And that's going to be a real key. Again, I think for Ty Simpson, he's been one of the hottest quarterbacks in America, 41 out of his last 46, a couple of drops in there. He's got some big stats. He's impressed everyone. I think Ty has been – extremely impressive, but this is a big step up. You know, you're going against the best here. Kirby Smart, when it comes to defense, he doesn't have many rivals, as you know, Gary. So it's going to be a real challenge. They're going to come after Ty. There's no doubt about it. And I think, like you said, you made a great point. You got to play well around him. People, the offensive line is going to have to step it up a notch. I think the weapons are there. I think if you can generate some balance, get Ty some opportunities, I think Alabama could make some big plays. Tennessee scorched them. Aguilar threw for, 370-something yards. But keep in mind now, Tennessee also rushed for 175 yards. So they could keep Georgia honest with the running game.
Yeah, that's exactly where I was going to go as well. You're reading my mind. The running game. You can take some pressure off Ty, particularly early in the game, if you can establish the running game. The expectation is that Jam Miller will be back. Alabama, I think it's safe to say, has been a little spotty so far in the running game. You've already alluded to it, but how big would it be if Alabama could establish the running game, force Georgia to respect the run, and open some things up for Ty in the passing game?
I think you have to. I mean, I don't, you know, Kirby feasts on one-dimensional offenses.
He does, yeah.
I think you have to be able to run the football. Even if you get a lead, Gary, how valuable is it to be able to run the football in the fourth quarter? You know, to be able to pound it, keep the ball away from the other team, you know, wear them down. All of those things are key factors. And I think you early in the game, you deliver body blows, you know, with the run game. And, you know, you open up opportunities to make big plays. So, yeah, I mean, I think Alabama's running game is it's not been, you know, to me, it's been you said spotty. I think that's probably being kind, actually. I mean, it's not been very good to me. But again, this is an opportunity to, you know, see what you can do. And I don't think this Georgia defensive front, Gary, they're good. Don't get me wrong. They're very good up front defensively. They're not what they have been. They're not as dominant. I think obviously Tennessee proved that. So it's going to be interesting to see what can Alabama do to kind of get this run game going. So that's going to be something I think is going to be a real focus, something worth watching.
All right, win or lose, I think it's important to point this out. This will just be the fourth game of the season, the first SEC game. So win or lose, there's a lot of football left, a lot of football. And either way, you know, you got a chance to have a great a successful season if you win. Or, you know, if you lose, you still got a chance to come back and have a successful season. So I don't want to put it all in one game. But with Alabama having dropped that opener in Tallahassee, with what's ahead beginning really – a week from Saturday, a Vanderbilt team that just scored 70 points and beat Alabama last year comes to Tuscaloosa. So you can't rest or you know, enjoy this victory too long, or if you lose, you have to get over it. Having said that, for where this program's at with Kalen DeBoer after losing that opener, if you lose this game, not only do you go to 0-1 in the SEC, 2-2 overall, but the same questions are going to start coming right back up in the same scrutiny. How important is it for Kalen DeBoer and this coaching staff to get a win on Saturday night?
Well, I think obviously it would be a huge win. You know, I mean, look, Georgia's won 33 in a row there. To be able to go on the road and pick one off would be monumental. But you hit the nail on the head. You can't celebrate. I mean, you just can't. You don't even have a 24-hour rule on this one. And the reason is because you've got Vanderbilt. You know, last year you beat Georgia and you go lay an egg against Vanderbilt. And like you said, Vanderbilt's even improved over last year. I think they're a better football team. Then you've got Missouri at Missouri. Then you've got Tennessee coming in here. You've got South Carolina on the road. You've got LSU here. Then you've got Oklahoma here. You got Auburn there. It's going to be a real, real gauntlet. This is going to be challenging. And so you have to take them one at a time. And we're going to find out about Alabama's mental toughness. I really, you know, I think that when you look at this schedule, if they can get by Georgia, then you know, the challenge is there to keep your feet on the ground. I mean, we can't focus on anything but the next one. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to watch this stretch. I think it's going to tell us a lot about, you know, the direction we're going here with this Alabama program.
Last year in Tuscaloosa, Alabama absolutely pounced on Georgia. I mean, that first half of football against Georgia last year, and we saw some incredible first halves with Nick Saban. That was as good a first half of football when you consider the caliber of the opponent that maybe you and I have seen at Alabama. I mean, absolutely dominant half of football, and then hung on for dear life. Now, Carson Beck's at Miami now. He's not the quarterback. We mentioned Gunnar Stockton. But in the second half, whatever Alabama did defensively, that Georgia staff figured it out. And they went up and down the field in the second half. So Alabama got the win, but that first half of defense compared to the second half of defense. Obviously, this defense, we've talked a lot about Alabama's offense, but this defense has got to hold up. And they got to hold up for four quarters if Alabama's going to win that game Saturday night, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. And like I said, with Georgia's mindset, the way they want to run the ball, you know, fortunately, I'm expecting Keenan back at least to some extent. So that should be big, help you up front defensively. Throw in Keenan there with LT Overton and James Smith. And then, of course, London Simmons has done a nice job, the true freshman filling in. But you're minus Jeremiah Beeman. So you don't have a ton of depth. And, you know, that's one thing that's to me is a real concern. How are you going to hold up front defensively? to this running game that wants to pound you. So that's going to be a real challenge there, Gary. And I think, too, like I said, you've got to be able to contain Gunnar Stockton. You can't give him running lanes to pull the ball down. So that's going to be another real key. You know, Georgia's proven they can throw the football. Branch is an explosive player for them. I mean, he's brought another dimension to their offense. So, you know, these are all going to be challenges for the Alabama defense. But to me, you know, again, it's up front. What are you going to be able to do to slow down Georgia? And that's going to be what I'm going to watch. Can this defensive front hold up to what they're getting ready to experience?
Wow, it's going to be something else, Rod. It is. It's going to be, like I said, one of the latest chapter in what has become a unique rivalry, in that most of these times that these two teams play, right, it's either the SEC championship game or a national championship game. Very, you know, haven't been that many regular season meetings, but we mentioned Kirby's record against Alabama, just one win. But overall, going back to, you know, Nick Saban beginning in 2008 in the blackout game over there, Alabama has just absolutely owned Georgia. And you said it. I was talking about the pressure on Alabama with how motivated Georgia's going to be. But on the other side, and I'm talking about more about the fan bases, the rivalry between the fan bases. Georgia fans, you know, they're gonna talk big this week. That's what fan bases do. There's going to be a lot of bravado. But, Roddy, you know, they're shaking in their shoes. If the roles were reversed, hey, man, we've talked about the little bit of success that Auburn had against Nick Saban and how nervous that made Alabama fans. Georgia fans have got to be just – they got to be just scared to death, right?
You would think so. Maybe some of them are, but they're usually pretty confident going into this Alabama game that they're the better team. And, you know, there's always been excuses why it didn't turn out the way they expected. You know, we've seen that many, many times. They rarely seem to give Alabama a lot of credit when we're, and again, we're talking about fan bases here. But, you know, listen, they should be confident because they are a really good team. They're playing at home. And, you know, they rarely lose there. So I understand, you know, having an extreme level of confidence going into this game if you're on their side. But at the same time, Gary, I just think Alabama's going to go in and play really well. And they're going to be prepared for this game. I don't think we've seen Kalen DeBoer's teams really against a better team. And I'm talking about like Georgia. You know, they went into LSU last year. That was a good LSU team. And they obliterated LSU. And I thought they were turning the corner. And then the next week, you know, it's a game that you think, okay, you know, Oklahoma has no chance, right? And you saw what happened. So I think, you know, going on the road against a better team, I'm going to be interested to see how Alabama kind of handles this. But, you know, we can talk about they haven't handled responded to adversity well on the road. But I thought they did actually last year, obviously, against LSU. So we'll see what happens Saturday night.
All right, changing the topic, Chris Lowe reporting that Alabama's three permanent SEC opponents beginning next year when the 9-game schedule comes into effect will be Auburn and Tennessee. No surprise there. Expected that. The third team we thought would either be LSU or Mississippi State. I'm glad it's Mississippi State. I think I'm glad to see that rivalry restored. I think that I know a lot of people look forward to going to Baton Rouge every other year, but to have Mississippi State, which is just, you know, an hour away, it's an easy trip for the fans. There are a lot of Alabama fans in the state of Mississippi. And I'll be honest with you, even though Mississippi State's a good program and having a great start to the season, I think that for Alabama, if you got to draw Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU every year, man, that's a juggernaut. I think the SEC handled this right. I like the fact that Mississippi State is a permanent opponent beginning next year. What about you?
No, I thought that should be it to begin with, actually. So, yeah, I do like that. And, you know, you'll still play LSU every other year, right? I mean, that's the expectation. I think that's the way it's going to work out. So it's not like you're going to be only seeing them once every 4 or 6 years. So you still play them, but you won't play them, like you said, as a permanent opponent. And I like that. I mean, I think what is Starkville's, you know, it's an hour and a half drive from Tuscaloosa. It's your most, really, it's in terms of the location or distance, it's your most natural rival there. And, you know, the history there is, you know, the long history of the series. So Yes. I mean, like you said, I do love the LSU series. You know, you've got LSU, you got Tennessee, you got Auburn. Those seem like natural rivals, of course. But, you know, when you have three, I think that Mississippi State certainly is the one that you would want in that group.
And before we close it out, I want to get your reaction to the Auburn-Oklahoma game. Gutsy win for Oklahoma at home. Two really good defensive teams, it looked like. Both offenses struggled at times. But you and I have had discussions about officiating for years. It's a hard job. And, boy, every week there are missed calls. And teams benefit from them sometimes. Sometimes they don't. You remember the games in which your team did not benefit. You and I could rattle off several right off the top of our head with Alabama. But in this game, I don't know that I've ever seen the instant amount of fury over what people perceive to be as missed calls as in this game. The SEC immediately that night putting out a statement about the deception play that Oklahoma ran to get that touchdown in the second quarter. And just a general feeling and on social media that Auburn was cheated out of the game. I mean, they still had an opportunity to win. As we said, this has been going on for a while with missed calls. Yet this game, for whatever reason, seems to have garnered a more specific reaction, not just from fans, but also from the Southeastern Conference. What's your take on that?
Well, and if you're looking at it from an Alabama perspective, I would say, you know, you go back to 2022, nobody really wanted to talk about or cared to talk about the officiating in Knoxville when, you know, and again, I know we don't have to relive it, but McKinstry makes the interception and you got a guy, a referee right on top of the play who doesn't make a call. And you got a guy standing by the goalpost and he's 25 yards away from the play. And he waits till McKinstry gets to near midfield before he throws a flag. And the hits on Bryce Young to the head that weren't called. There was a lot of plays in that game. And I agree with people that say, hey, the officiating has been lacking. And it has. And they did miss some calls, you know, Saturday. I'm sure they missed some both ways. There were some that were more apparent for Auburn or against Auburn, I should say. You know, so I get that. And, you know, again, they have to do something to improve that. I don't think there's any question about that is needed. But sometimes that happens. I don't think there was, you know, people say, well, they ripped Auburn off and it looked intentional and this kind of thing. I mean, obviously, I don't agree with that. I mean, there were some calls that unfortunately went the other way that, you know, again, it clearly hurt Auburn. But, you know, just talking about that game in general, though, Gary, and away from the, you know, that aspect of it, I was impressed with both teams defensively. I mean, really impressed with what Auburn does with their defensive line, what they did with their front seven. Thought they really played extremely well. DJ Durkin really impressed me. So from that standpoint, you know, Auburn played extremely well. And then what about Todd Bates, the former Alabama player, the defensive line coach for Oklahoma? What he's done with that defensive line, pretty amazing, man. They got 10 sacks, Oklahoma did. They pretty much dominated the front. So if I were Auburn, I would probably be more concerned with the 10 sacks and what happened with the referees.
Good stuff as always, Rodney, and the chatter at TiderInsider.com and the reporting that you do, the content, but also those forums are always busy during football season. But this week, I got a feeling that they're going to be even a little more intense than normal.
Yeah, they are rolling. TiderInsider.com. It's only $48 a year.
Thank you, Rodney.
Okay, buddy. Take care.
All right, 9:55. We'll take a timeout and come back and wrap up this first hour of the Gary Harris Show right after this.
That to them each and every time they come and visit us.
The sense of pride that we have in the quality, the consistency of our food carries over to everything we do in the stores. That's Taco Guy.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and
be making the plays, you'll be making the bets, and finally getting the sports glory you deserve. The
Sportsbook at Golden Moon Casino. Play the game.
Since 2011, Billy's Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big-screen, high-definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and
diesel generators. True South Generators, 205-609-2642.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today, a passing shower or a thunderstorm in a few spots this afternoon and this evening. A high today 90, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow morning sunshine, a few scattered showers and storms by afternoon, the high 91. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 78 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
You're listening to The Gary Harris Show.
Oh, my.
Streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 9:58. That's going to wrap it up for hour number one. Hour number two, though, coming up, we got Casey Smith on golf at 10:30. More of your phone calls. I'm going to dive into this SEC schedule with the 9-game schedule starting next year and looking it over. I think the SEC did a nice job. I think it's pretty fair and equitable across the board. We'll run it down, run down all of the teams' permanent opponents for you. Plus, an update on Jahlil Bethea, the Alabama basketball player who unfortunately got hurt in practice last week, but it might not turn out to be that bad. We've got an update on his status coming up in the second hour. This hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union. Another hour of the Gary Harris Show is on the way.
CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Steve DeSager.
The Dodgers took the late ball game 6-3 over San Francisco. No decision for Clayton Kershaw. He pitched 4 1/3 innings, 6 strikeouts, 4 walks. That could be his last start in L.A. He's retiring after this year. The Dodgers officially clinched a playoff spot as Arizona lost at home 8-2 to Philadelphia. San Diego was beaten 4-3 at the White Sox. The Mets downed Washington 12-6, while Cincinnati beat the Cubs 7-4. Losses for Toronto and the Yankees, but Boston was a winner at Tampa Bay 11-7. Detroit has lost 7 of 8, their lead in the AL Central down to 2.5 games over the Guardians. Detroit was beaten at home 10-1 by Atlanta. Cleveland won its 8th game in a row, 6-2 at Minnesota.
Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. Babbel.com.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV. Crimson Tide Kickoff. Play-by-play for Alabama sports and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for The Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show, hour number two on this Monday, September 22nd, 2022. I am, or 2025, 22 is right up there, Chase. Welcome back into the program. I'm Gary Harris. Chase Brunfeld's back in the control room, and let me bring Chase in, because we had the entire hour and never even got to talk to Chase at all. So he does a great job, of course, for a number of our shows, and does a terrific job for me. Good morning, Chase. How you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Gary?
Doing great. I got to ask you, because You and I talked about this last week, and I said, I'm going to run down all the teams. I think the SEC did a nice job of making these permanent opponents fair and equitable. But Alabama, we knew, would draw Auburn and Tennessee. The question was, would Alabama draw either LSU or Mississippi State for that final permanent rival? And a lot of people wanted LSU. You and I wanted Mississippi State. I worked in Mississippi. You went to school there. And you and I love the Highway 82 drive, and I think it's convenient for fans of both fan bases. It's Alabama's longest standing rival is Mississippi State, not Auburn, not LSU, not Tennessee. I'm glad to see Alabama and Mississippi State go back to playing every year beginning next year. Are you?
Yes, I am. I think it's pretty cool, especially with how close Mississippi State is to UA. From my vantage point, especially that drive you just explained, it's pretty easy for me and my friends to come and see UA play. But, you know, it kind of sucks that it's gotten to this point, because I like to see, like, you know, LSU and other teams that the rivalries have had with UA. But, hey, it opened up the sport, especially, like, in terms of recruiting, you know?
Yeah, it does. And like I said, now for me, I guess some of it is convenience, because with me doing that hour high school show on Friday nights, these longer road trips are tough for me. And I used to, of course, do a Saturday morning show, which made it almost impossible to go on a long road game unless we did the show on location, which we did do from time to time. But the great thing about playing in Starkville was it didn't matter if it was an early game, an afternoon game, or a night game. And no matter how busy I was on Friday night, it was easy for me to get up and drive to Starkville. It was almost like a home game. And so I love the convenience of it, and I love the fact that these two campuses are the closest two campuses of anybody in the SEC. So I'm excited to have this Mississippi State series back. And I guess, as I said, having worked in that state, having covered Mississippi State, covering Alabama for over 20 years, it's going to be fun for me. Overall, though, as I said, I'll get into all the opponents in just a moment. I think the SEC did a nice job. Chase, let me go ahead before we go any further and tell everybody in this hour of the Gary Harris Show being brought to you by Patterson Law Firm. When you need an attorney here in West Alabama, I think it's important to hire an attorney in West Alabama. And remember, there's never a dime out of your pocket unless Patterson Law Firm collects for you. An easy phone number to remember, 205-345-1000, 205-345-1000. And when you call Patterson Law Firm, you'll never get a call center. You'll talk to a real attorney right here in West Alabama. Available for consultation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Local and here for when you need them. That's Patterson Law Firm.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of services performed by other lawyers.
All right, let's get into these permanent opponents, Chase. And we mentioned already Alabama's going to have Tennessee, Auburn, and Mississippi State. Arkansas is going to draw Missouri, Texas, and LSU. Now, remember, you're going to play the other teams, too. Okay. I don't want to, you know, there's going to be 9 games, but these are the 3 opponents that you'll play every year, home and away, on the rotation. Auburn's permanent opponents are going to be Alabama, Georgia, and Vanderbilt. Florida's going to be Georgia, South Carolina, and Kentucky. And I think that a lot of Florida people will be glad to see, not that Kentucky and South Carolina aren't good teams, but to get off that gauntlet of the schedule that they've had this year and only have Georgia there is kind of a team that you think traditionally is going to be a powerhouse. I think that's a break for Florida. You know, they traditionally have drawn Auburn and Georgia and LSU. Now they get Georgia, South Carolina, and Kentucky. Georgia will draw Auburn, Florida, and South Carolina. Kentucky gets Florida, Tennessee, and South Carolina. LSU gets Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Texas A&M. Mississippi State gets Ole Miss, Vandy, and Alabama. Missouri draws Arkansas, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma will play, of course, Texas, but also Ole Miss and Missouri. That's interesting there. Ole Miss will get Mississippi State, obviously, LSU, obviously, and Oklahoma. That's no picnic. South Carolina will draw Georgia, Florida, and Kentucky. Tennessee gets Bama, Vandy, and Kentucky. So other than Bama, you could argue that Tennessee you know, it's not playing a traditional SEC power, but Vanderbilt's come a long way. Texas will, of course, get Texas A&M, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. Texas A&M, permanent opponents will be Texas, LSU, and Mizzou, and Vanderbilt's permanent opponents will be Auburn, Tennessee, and Mississippi State. So that, according to Chris Lowe, and we expect that the SEC will verify that soon. But I think the SEC did a nice job. You're not going to make everybody happy. I think initially most people are going to say Tennessee caught a break on the schedule. But, you know, you have to look at the geography as well. I mean, you know you're going to play Alabama. Nobody's giving up the Tennessee-Alabama rivalry. You're going to draw Kentucky because that's a long-time rival, and Vandy's your in-state rival. So it just kind of worked out that way. I think Alabama getting Mississippi State over LSU, as I said, I like that. You still get Tennessee and Auburn every year. Auburn, a lot of people felt like they should draw Alabama, Georgia, and Florida. You know, they didn't want that. So they get Vanderbilt, which, you know, you got to play Alabama and Georgia every year. That's tough. So I don't see any problem there with that. I think that, again, it's I think the SEC did a nice job. I do. I think that I'm, you know, I don't know that I even like a nine-game conference schedule, but I do like having Mississippi State back on the schedule every year. As I said, for me, that's the game I look forward to, particularly going to Starkville. I just always loved going over there. Like I said, easy drive. They treat the media really, really well at Mississippi State. And, of course, obviously it's always fun because normally Alabama wins. That's part of it, too. You know, the last time that Alabama lost in Starkville would have been Fly Croom in 2006. Or check that, 2007. Yeah, 2007. Was over there. 2006, Mississippi State beat Alabama in Tuscaloosa. Mike Shula. But 2007 was the last time that State beat Alabama. So it's always fun from that reason as well. All right, let's take a phone call right now and get to our pal Ellis up in Tennessee. Hey, Ellis, good morning.
How's it going, Gary Harris?
Doing well, man. I'm just hoping we get some rain down here at some point. It's got to rain at some point, right, Ellis? I mean,
We need it up here, too.
I know you're fired up about this weekend.
Yes, I am. I'd love to be there in the stands, but I can't, so I'll just be watching it from the house. But
I'm sending a crew over to cover the game, but I don't think I'm going to go either. I've got couple guys that are dying to go. Of course, I've been to Athens and enjoy it. Beautiful stadium, beautiful little town, but it'll be easier for me to stay back, so I'm not going to go either.
Well, next year or whenever we go over there, it'd be easy to go over to Stark Vegas over there.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying. I'm so happy that Mississippi State got the nod over LSU, and I know there are going to be some Alabama fans that aren't. There are going to be some Alabama fans that say, man, we need to play LSU every year. You know, we look forward to going down to Red Stick. But I just think in terms of the logistics, they tried to keep these rivalries for the most part with a thought toward, you know, the geography. Now, Oklahoma and Ole Miss doesn't fit that category, but most of these permanent opponents do. And as I said, man, that's a fun little trip. I can make it regardless of whether it's an 11 o'clock game, a 2:30 game, or a 6:30 game. So, yeah, I look forward to playing Mississippi State again. I do. And obviously, you know, they weren't going to do the third Saturday in October matchup or the Iron Bowl. So the only question for Alabama was who would be that third team. And I think we all knew it was either going to be LSU or Mississippi State. I'm glad it's Mississippi State.
I am too. Like I told Chase, I've never been over there, but I'll have to make a trip because they say they make some awesome ice cream over there.
Oh, man. I at halftime, I always get mine, and I always go back and say, hey, I got to have another one, you know? And it is incredible. That ice cream is incredible. And, you know, it's you'll enjoy it. It's a smaller stadium, but they have done so much to it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful little campus. And when Alabama comes to town, I mean, it's big for every school in the SEC when Alabama comes in. It just is. But for Mississippi State, because of the closeness and they haven't beaten Alabama many times, but boy, when they have, it's been monumental going back to 1980 when they snapped Coach Bryant's 28-game win streak and really cost Alabama a chance to win a third consecutive national championship. So Sly Croom, beating Alabama twice, and even though they didn't win, those games when Dan Mullen was there with Dak Prescott, Mississippi State got the number one in the country, and those games were great games. So, and I remember over there in 2017 when it had been a close game the whole way, and Jalen hit Devontae Smith right there at the end of the game to beat him. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I've got a friend that's a big Tennessee fan. He's going this weekend to see the Tennessee and Mississippi State game.
Mississippi State's playing well this year. I mean, they're 4-0, man. They're not used to that. So maybe they'll give Tennessee a game.
I've got to find him a place to eat over there. He wants me to find it, see if I can talk to somebody that can help him find a place to eat over there.
They got some good places, man. They really do. So, yeah, you talk to your friends over there. There's a barbecue place over there, and I can't think of the name of it. So one of our listeners probably can. They got an outstanding barbecue place, man. I mean,
He's a big old man. He's like 300-something pounds, so he can put some
people. Well, they got a barbecue joint that is top notch. And if one of our listeners is listening, call in and tell us or whatever. But somebody help us out with that. But if you've got some good Starkville eating joints, pass them along to us here on the show. Hey, I got to hit the break, y'all. It's good to hear from you. Hey, give me your – I know you'll call back on Friday, but right now, as we sit here on Monday, what are you thinking about Saturday night? You got a feel for it yet?
35-28, Alabama.
I hear you, brother. I hear you. All right. Thank you, my friend.
Roll Tide, Gary Harris.
All right. 10:18 here on the Gary Harris Show. Hey, listen, we're back at the free, and it's free. Irish Pub on Friday morning. Friday's the free. So we're looking forward to being live. And also that means we start back our Bama football trivia giveaway, courtesy of T-Town Menswear and T-Town Gallery in the University Mall. We'll be giving away another spectacular prize on Friday. And again, a lot of people have asked me about coming by since they don't open until 11. And as I've said before, if you come by that side door over by the stage where I'm set up, you can slide in a little bit early and hang out. You're more than welcome to do that. You can't really order anything until 11 o'clock, but you can come hang out and then get some lunch as soon as they open at 11 a.m. So we'll be back in Inspire Irish Pub on Friday morning for Friday the Free and our T-Town Menswear T-Town Giveaway Alabama Football, our T-Town Menswear T-Town Gallery Alabama Football Trivia Giveaway as well. All right, we'll be back. Let's get some phone calls in. 205-342-9904 is the number. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Now, this hour is West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
Here are the headlines brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. All of West Alabama is in drought, but ABC 3340 meteorologist Riley Blackwell tells us some relief is ahead.
We do have a chance of rain coming Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Probably the best chance of rain most of us have seen in several days.
The dry conditions have resulted in 35 wildfires, 9 here in West Alabama. The Northport City Council is set to execute an agreement tonight with Southeastern Network of Athletic Professional Sports Tourism Consulting for representation of the new Northport Shores Sports Complex. And Hale County authorities are looking for jailed escapee Darren Brooks Jr. He's considered armed and dangerous. Don't buy your new or pre-owned Mercedes-Benz from anywhere other than Mercedes-Benz of Tuscaloosa. Our local team provides a 5-star buying experience and 5-star service. Over 100 new cars are in stock. 31 pre-owned vehicles available. Shop local. Mercedes CitiesOfTuscaloosa.com or come see us at 3200 Skyline Boulevard East, Tuscaloosa. I'm Don Hartley.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept. Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa at Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m. Available for after-hours events.
You do got this.
NyQuil Intense Flu. The nighttime sniffling, aching fever. Best sleep with the flu? Medicine. Use as directed. Keep out of reach of children.
Tide 100.9. Tuscaloosa weather.
Sky partially sunny today. A passing shower or a thunderstorm in a few spots this afternoon and this evening. The high today 90. Tonight's low 68. Tomorrow morning sunshine. A few scattered showers and storms by afternoon. The high 91. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9.
It's 81 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Hot. Your home for Alabama Crimson Tide football. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, 10:23. Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show here on Tide 100.9 FM, 1230 AM WQBC. And don't forget to download our app and, I get behind on the app messages sometimes, and I need to do a better job. I try to check them, and then some will come in right at the end of the show. And I missed a bunch last week when we were doing our segment with Larry the Music Man about your favorite stolen R&B artists from the 70s. So I want to rattle some of those off, even though they're old, because Johnny G sent in all his and down in Mobile, and I missed him. So I'm sorry about that, Johnny G. But we were talking about five favorite R&B soul artists from the 70s. He listed Atlanta Rhythm Section, Boss Gags, Delbert McClinton, and Billy Preston. And also for bands, he listed the Commodores, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Tower of Power, Sam and Dave, Kool and the Gang. So really good list there from Johnny. And eight that I missed those last week, but do appreciate people using our app and sending us messages from time to time. Hey, got some news here on Jahlil Bethia, Alabama's outstanding transfer wing from the University of Miami. It was announced yesterday that he suffered an injury and had surgery, and after having an injury in practice. Nate Oates put that message out through Yay Alabama, the Crimson Tide Collective, yesterday. And I'm going to read you that and have an update on his status as soon as I can get to it. Here it is. This is from Nate Oates yesterday. Jahlil Bethia injured his left foot during practice this week, which required surgery to repair. The procedure was performed by Dr. Norman Waldrop with Andrew Sports Medicine on Friday, September 19th in Birmingham. While there is no timetable for Bethia's return, we do not anticipate this injury is season ending, and we expect him to return this year. Now, this morning, there has been an update reported by Adam Zagoria, basketball insider for the New York Times, Forbes Sports, and NewJersey.com. And he is reporting that it's a broken pinky toe and that Jahlil could potentially be back by late November. And no official timetable from the school, but that would be great news. I mean, you're talking about if he's back by late November, then he's just going to miss, you know, some of the pre-conference and then have an entire month of December to get himself into playing shape for the SEC schedule. So that sounds like a pretty good scenario there. The small toe having been broken. So not the worst injury. Certainly not ideal. I mean, he's going to miss, you know, a lot of practice time, preseason games, non-conference games. And this is a guy, quite frankly, that I think Alabama fans feel like had a chance to come in here and be a starter. I think the coaches probably feel the same way. The good news is Alabama's got a lot of depth at that position. They've got a lot of what you would call small forward, shooting guard type players, wing players. So this will give an opportunity for some other guys to step up. And it sounds like Bethea, according to Adam Zagoria, will be back by late November. So that's not a bad scenario. You know what else is not a bad scenario? In fact, it's a really good scenario, and that's Casey Smith on golf. To preview the Ryder Cup, it is finally here. It seems like we've been waiting on the Ryder Cup for a while, but this week it gets cranked up, and over the weekend, I know there'll be tons of college football, but there'll also be the Ryder Cup, and we're all looking forward to that. We're going to preview that next with Casey Smith on golf, right here on the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM at 1230 AM WTVC.
Another language? Save up to 50% on your Babbel subscription when you sign up at Babbel.com. That's Babbel.com to save up to 50%. Babbel.com.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. It's time for Casey Smith on golf. And, of course, we're talking Ryder Cup. It's finally here. And it seems like it has taken forever to get here. But the Ryder Cup opening ceremonies on Thursday. And, of course, competition on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at one of the United States of America's most famous public golf courses, Bethpage Black, up in New York. Casey, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Gary. Hope you're doing well.
Doing great, and like I said, it's finally here as fast as time flies, I guess because there's been so much anticipation for this event in New York at Bethpage Black that it just seems like it's hung over the entire golf season, even bigger. It seems like it's been bigger than the majors and the FedEx Cup Championship, and it's like, come on, get here already. Where it's, like I said, it's finally here.
Yeah, this is one of the Ryder Cups where – was put on a schedule, really, if you look at some of how they do the scheduling, occasionally a Ryder Cup will be put on the schedule, you know, like this was 2025 Ryder Cup, and it, well in advance of some that maybe are ahead of it, you know, of the this was on the schedule circled before 2023, if you go way back. You know, Phil and Ian Poulter thought they were going to be the captains at this Ryder Cup. They thought there were sort of, that was the sequence of how it was going to go on. I mean, this was going to be, you know, circled for everyone. Phil got this one. Tiger got a couple coming up. You know, Poulter was getting this one, and then it went on down their list. And you know, those are big stars in the game. That probably, along with New York, Bethpage Black is, like you said, that five courses there. They play 300,000 rounds a year over those five courses. It is a fantastic facility. It's one of the hardest golf courses you'll ever play, you would ever play in your life. And it's open to the public. The Black course, the other ones are manageable. The Black course that they're playing this on is really a tough course. And if, you know, listeners don't realize this, but you have guys sleeping in their car overnight to play the Black course. You have, you know, public golfers and paying, you know, a little bit more premium there than they would somewhere else if you're a local resident. Because it's a muni, you get a discounted rate. So, you know, this is one of America's courses, as you said. It's in New York, a heartbeat of America type place, and you're going to expect rabid fans. Easier to get to out there than all the way out on the Long Island. It's in Farmingdale, New York, so it's not all the way out on Long Island. And then you just have this, you know, the Ryder Cup has built up the past few years into – there's, a, you know, other sports, the tension of other sports has come in as far as the teams go. It seems like it's not just a fan rivalry anymore. There is some animosity when they step inside the ropes to go, I don't like those guys anymore. I may have liked them on the PGA Tour, but I don't like them this week. And the emotion shows. And they're already talking on the front end, the players, about that from Europe and the U.S. about, yeah, there's going to be something happen this week. There always is. Well, guess what? They're setting it up for that. Tensions are high. It should be all-time TV, opening ceremonies Thursday, foursomes and four ball on Friday, foursomes and four ball on Saturday. singles on Sunday. All along, one of the best football weekends of the year. When you look at the matchups, and there is a feeling that in recent years, of course, that for so many years, the United States dominated the Ryder Cup. But over the last 30 years or so, Europe has established themselves as a consistent contender and really probably the better team for the most part. And this year, I think the feeling is that the European team probably, if you look at their roster, you would say they have a more consistent lineup. They have more guys playing well headed in, because when you look at Team USA, and obviously you got Scottie Scheffler. So any team that Scottie Scheffler is on in the world, he's going to be the best player. But outside of him, you certainly have to look at Ben Griffin's played really, really well coming in. I think Russell Henley's been solid. But a lot of the top guys for Team USA right now aren't playing very well. Korn Morikawa. Cantlay's come on a little bit, but Shoffley's not playing great. Justin Thomas isn't playing great. We don't know about Bryson because we haven't seen him in a while since he's coming over from LIV. Would you agree with me that there are more questions regarding the U.S. lineup than the European lineup?
I mean, you're looking at the European lineup, and they thrashed us in Rome, and they really didn't change any players. They we got one different player, which is the twin. Nikolai Højgaard played in Rome, and now you've got Rasmus Højgaard, who's probably a better player overall. So theoretically, their team has gotten stronger, and they found form late this year, where a lot of our guys were hot earlier in the year, except for Scottie Scheffler. He maintained form, but some of those guys' form slipped as the year went on, and that's where the questions come in. You saw some guys like Xander's form slip. You saw some guys like Morikawa's form slip. One of the best 12 players, no question, is Keegan Bradley. He's not playing, But you saw guys like Cameron Young, who won a New York State Open there, who has tons of experience on that golf course. He played great late, so that's got to give us some hope. JT, it's hard to predict, what he's going to do from week to week. I mean, we follow him as close as anyone, and we don't have a feel. I would think, given he's played really well in team formats with a lot of emotion, I'm predicting he's going to play well. I mean, he's just getting more seasoned in those events. It means a lot to him. But, knowing how these matches and matchups go, the top of the food chain has got to go out and earn points. And Bryson DeChambeau, we got to have a big week from him. I expect Harris English to play really well. He is so steady. I expect Russell Henley to play well. I expect Scottie Scheffler to play well. These guys are all going to have to show up. But if your top guys, who usually get matched up with top of the other side, play really well, your team's probably going to win. And the thing to watch for is that first match. The first match out each day determines a lot, usually, of what happens in the cup. I do think, to your question, I was thinking the U.S. had a really, 6 months ago, 4 months ago, I was thinking the U.S. was really the favorite to win. We are the favorite on paper, but we've been the favorite for the last 10 Ryder Cups, and we've won three. We still maintain a 27-15 overall record in all Ryder Cups, but they definitely won their share in the last, 20, 30 years. So I would say, if I'm leaning right now, I'm going to go U.S., but by a just eyelash. I mean, I think it's a pretty big draw, and that's really betting with my patriotic heart. Does Scottie Scheffler play all five matches? 100%. If they were, okay. There were 10 matches, he'd play all 10. You got to put your horses out. Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler, two guarantees you can write down. Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler will play 5 and 5.
In the duo event, which are more obviously than the singles, do you pair Scotty with different players? I know everybody's interested to see the pairings and the matchups. What's your best guess for Scotty as far as a teammate?
I would think that Bryson is definitely someone. It's just the ball. Scotty's disposition of not being rattled allows him, and being the best player on earth, to be paired with really anyone. where, you know, he's not as emotional guy. So maybe you're putting him with someone who is a more emotional guy. But, you know, Sam Burns has been an obvious partner of his previously. I don't think that's going to be the case. I wouldn't be shocked if JT is potentially a partner of his. J.J. Spahn, I read, potentially a partner of his. You know, getting him the right partner is going to be a very important deal. Then when you look at the golf ball and who plays what ball, Bryson's the most particular. Finding someone that's going to be okay playing his golf ball, where he and Cam Young play the same golf ball. Because you play in alternate shot, in foursomes, as it's called, but it's alternate shot, you're playing with one of the players' balls. You're not switching each hole. So you got to get really comfortable with that, because these balls all fly different, especially at this skill level. These balls, they know, are 5 yard difference, 10 yards, spin rate, different windows. The big variable, and the biggest variable, is the golf ball. So that's the whole thing. I'm going to say I can see a Scotty with Harris English as well. Two really cool, calm guys go out there, no nonsense, playing really well. We'll be interested to see. Sam Burns is his really close friend, but he's not. He was a captain's pick, and I think you got to put somebody with him that you feel like that's the alpha dog pairing. They're going to go set the tone, get points on the board, because those scoreboards are everywhere, and keep that momentum going.
All right, let's talk about JT, because early in his career, he was a Ryder Cup. Man, he was a stalwart, whether you put him with Spieth or Tiger. But the last Ryder Cup wasn't good for any of the Americans. And JT, I think, has slipped some in the eyes of the golfing public. And just that, as far as, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, he was thought to be, you know, maybe the best player in the world, was number one in the world for a while. And when it came to Ryder Cup, he was an automatic. He was, you know, playing as many matches as you can. Now I've been reading some of the pundits saying, you know, you've got to limit JT. You can't count on him. Too inconsistent, too wild with the driver, you know, not a consistent putter. And with no Spieth or Tiger, you said you might compare him with Scotty. What do you think JT's role will be? Will he be a prominent player, or will he be a guy maybe that doesn't play in as many matches as he would like?
I can see him playing 3 matches. The four-ball matches, because he's still top 10 in birdies made, and so you go put him with someone who's very steady and let him go make a bunch of birdies. You're just – it's match play anyway. So you're trying to make a lot of birdies. Go let it rip, JT. And then you don't play him in foursomes because of what you said. You know, a little bit inconsistent. You're going to hit half the tee shots. If you looked on the scorecard and you could really pair him to where there were iron shots, you might. Because you can start it off that way and keep it to where, you know, if it falls on those holes, it's just really how the course is laid out. He could be a good partner, because 4 of those tee shots could be iron shots. So, or shots where he doesn't have to hit a driver, you know. They're just trying to put themselves in the best position to win. And I think he probably plays both 4-ball matches and sits in the foursomes and plays 3 total, because everybody plays the singles.
Casey, someone sent me a message, wanted me to ask you, and I don't even know the origin of it, so it's a great question. What is the envelope rule? What exactly? I know there's a name put into an envelope and it's sealed. What is it? Why is it done? Can you explain that?
Yeah. So if the envelope rule is before the last day, or before the event starts, I guess before the last day, after the Saturday round, the captain from each side puts a name in the envelope in the event someone can't play. And where it came into effect is Steve Pate. There was like 3 years in a row where it really happened. Steve Pate got in a car wreck, played one round, couldn't play the single round. So one of the European guys didn't play. Then the next year, a European guy got sick, Sam Torrance, I remember reading. And so a U.S. player couldn't play, who had won like 3 matches. And he was a captain's pick. Just trying to think about who it was. This is all, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So they just kept it going. The captain never tells the player, because basically he's putting in the envelope the person that he has the least amount of confidence in. And if it's not used, no one knows because you play, right? And they don't, it doesn't really have an effect on where you would play in the top 12, or like where you're going out to play, because that's also, that really has nothing to do with that. So I wouldn't look at that to say, okay, the guy who's in last is the envelope rule. Usually you're going to put someone steady at the back end when you play singles anyway, and it's not going to be your worst player unless you got a commanding lead and you're trying to front load it to go out and get the points on the board, retain the cup. So that's the envelope rule. It's really a protection of each side. If someone got sick the final night or injured during the Ryder Cup and they couldn't play the singles, that's when it really comes out.
All right, great explanation. And it's a good question. I'm glad that I was sent that and you were able to explain it in depth. Getting back to JT for a moment, one thing I will ask you about with him, the intangibles, the fire. Again, you know, Patrick Reed's not on the team. He was Captain America. You know, to have a couple guys, and certainly the captain, Keegan Bradley, has that fire. But that's one thing JT brings. I mean, he's not stoic. He's emotional. And we've seen it on display in this type of event, particularly on U.S. soil, having that guy that gets the crowd going and feeds that energy. Is that something outside of how he's playing, just the fire and energy and enthusiasm that he brings that Keegan Bradley will factor in, having a similar type personality?
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll see him, if he's not playing out there, leading cheers as he has in the past, because on this team, you got a lot of guys who are, you know, not extroverts, not outgoing personalities. And when you really look at the team right top to bottom, the captain, Bryson DeChambeau, and JT are your three heartbeats of the team. And they're, you know, even if you get into the assistant captains, you're really looking at Kevin Kisner, right? The rest of the guys are all pretty middle of the fairway. You're not going to see them get emotional one way or the other around their golf, around their celebrations or anything. So you're going to see Bryson, which I would expect him to be one of the first players out to set the tone, get the crowd going, or JT, first players out. But, you know, with the first matches meaning so much, you got to send someone out you feel most confident with, and just because historically that's mattered, and it does set the tone. So I think JT plays two foursome matches, four-ball matches for sure, and I think, you know, when he's not playing, he is going to be counted on to be one of the leaders of the team. He's also one of the guys who's been around the longest. He's got a lot of young guys, even though he's young. There's younger guys than him. So, yeah, I think good question. And I think he's going to be counted on big time because it's a team event and not everybody plays. It's not just him not playing or whoever it is. But we know there's a couple of guys that are going to play. And I think in golf, Your eyes don't lie. They got 4 days of practice, and they've practiced before. You're looking all week this week at who is playing well. If you're playing well all week, you're most likely going to play well. Golf is one of those things where it's weak to the time, especially being a muscle memory sport. You're playing every day. It's easy to repeat when you're playing every day and you find your groove. And you know, they're going to be looking at that. Who's playing well in practice this week and who's playing in the groups together will tell you a lot about who's going to be playing together this weekend.
Yeah, good point. All right, give us your prediction, not just on who's going to win, but can you give us a score?
Yeah, I mean, I like it to come down to us. I think it's going to come down to a really razor-thin margin and someone from the U.S. team, whoever that is, makes the putt to win by just barely retaining the cup by half point. So I think we're set up for, I really do. I think we're set up for just a barn burner of a Ryder Cup, similar to the way it was in Chicago, for Poulter birdie the final five holes to come back and win. It's somebody on our side, time to be that hero. And it would be awesome if it was Justin Thomas, right? Be wonderful. And as fiery as he is, he's as fiery as Poulter in those environments. So we could see that. For sure.
And lastly, big Ryder Cup weekend, big college football weekend. You're down the road from Athens and Atlanta. What's your prediction on Alabama and Georgia?
I'll be in attendance. I thought the secondary for Georgia was very soft looking against Tennessee. Hopefully we can exploit that. I thought up front they looked pretty good. I think it's going to be like a Ryder Cup. I like I like us to win barely in like a 31-28 game. I really do. That's not bad. That's not saying that with my heart. I think we still have their number a little bit. It's all around me. I'm going with all types of Georgia people. Sure hope we win. And it'll be fun. They're licking their chops to get us over here in this state. That's for sure.
No doubt about it. Thank you, Casey.
Hey, Gary, congrats to the UA women's golf team on winning this past week, and Harriet Lockley for taking on the individual win.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. I meant to get that in. But, yeah, great start for Alabama women looking to have a bounce-back season. Thanks a lot, Casey.
Thanks, Gary.
All right, 10:51. We're going to take a timeout. We're going to come back and squeeze in a couple phone calls before we close it out.
Coosackley's Chicken Fingers, the only sack you can cheer for and eat. Can't fake the foo.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And, of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big-screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily happy hour specials. And for the best Mexican cuisine in West Alabama, remember, the name is Los Tarascos, with locations in Tuscaloosa and Northport.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky partially sunny today, a passing shower or thunderstorm in a few spots this afternoon and this evening. A high today 90, tonight's low 68. Tomorrow morning sunshine, a few scattered showers and storms by afternoon, the high 91. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 83 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
Need to know what's going on with the Crimson Tide? Then subscribe to our YouTube channel for exclusive content on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
We're going to call a couple phone calls. This is to Mary over in the ATL. She's getting ready for the Bama-Georgia game. Hey, Mary.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
Yeah, something you and Rodney were talking about earlier kind of got me fired up a bit. They are getting really obnoxious over here. So, their smack talk is getting a little bit more amped up than it was a few days ago. They're getting really obnoxious over here. So.
Yeah, I expected that. And I think it's like Gene Stallings used to say. I think it's whistling through the graveyard. I think they're trying to hide their nervousness. And I think they understand that they have predicted victory many times, and it's come back to bite them in the you know what. So I don't think they're as confident as they seem. But at the same time, they Georgia fans want this one badly. This is not just another game, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's not, and yeah, they're definitely getting scared. We had a little bit of a tailgate party last night, and those people were there that I'm acquainted with, and yeah, they're nervous and they're scared, but. The one they should really be scared of on our team, our offense, they should be scared of Ryan Williams, because since he's back, he's got a fire lit under him, and I think he's going to cut loose Saturday.
That would be big for Alabama if he does. You're right. He's a special player, and they're going to need – Alabama's going to need some offensive players to step up, because I got a feeling I'll give my score prediction tomorrow night on Tide Insider TV, but I got a feeling that Georgia's going to move the ball some on Alabama. I think that, Tennessee, Georgia it wouldn't surprise me if it turns out to be that kind of game where there's a lot of points on both sides. So Alabama's offense is going to have to answer the bell. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
Oh, no, it's going to be close, but I'm ready. I think we're going to send them back to the pound, and we're going to do some damage. I'm ready.
All right, Mary, we'll talk to you more this week, I'm sure. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, sure. Roll Tide.
All right, let's get Jeff in real quick before we close it out. Jeff, you're going to be the final caller. Good morning.
What's up, Gary?
What's going on, buddy?
Hey, man, I'm going to be honest with you, man. Like, shoot, if Alabama can just stop their run, I think we got a good shot of beating Georgia badly. If we can stop their run. But that's going to be the key, is stopping their run.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry, Joseph. I saw it wrong. This is Joseph, not Jeff. Yeah, go ahead, Joseph. Make your point.
But, yeah, I believe if we can stop Georgia's running the ball, if we can just make them one-dimensional in passing, Alabama has a chance to get carried away in this game, because we're probably going to have Jam Miller back, and we're going to have, Ty Simpson and we got better receivers than Tennessee does. So, I mean, I feel like this, I mean, could be a very, very good game for Alabama if we just stop their run.
I agree with you, man. I think slow them down and get that offense going. You got a good chance. Hey, thank you, Joseph. Appreciate that. Sorry that I called you, Jeff. That's going to wrap it up for the show. This hour has been brought to you by Patterson Law Firm. Hey, a reminder that lunch is right around the corner, and why not start off the week with a great lunch at Who's Q and Brew in the Northridge Center, Highway 82 in Tuscaloosa. Outstanding lunch specials daily, great atmosphere, and in my opinion, the best barbecue in Tuscaloosa with great service to boot. You can't beat it. It's easy to find. Highway 82 in the Northridge Center in Tuscaloosa. Who's Q and Brew? All right, we got the Miller's Edge coming up next, and I'll be back tomorrow with the Tuesday edition of the Gary Harris Show. Also, catch me on local TV tonight with your sports on WVUA 23. Chase Brunfeld, I'm Gary Harris. Thanks for listening to the Gary Harris Show. It's going to be a great week. Alabama versus Georgia press conference is coming up today with the Alabama coaches, and we'll have that for you tomorrow. Talk to you in the morning at 9 a.m.